Conferences. Long agendas, big venues, always on your feet, barely getting to see the people that you want to see, and then, of course, the expense. Well, the three of us at Good Morning Hospitality are launching Good Morning Retreats. Our first retreat is this July 8th through the 10th at the Horst Hospitality Training School in Auburn, Alabama. If you go to goodmorningretreats.com, you'll find out more information about our first retreat that we're launching. We have already filled half the slots. We have 20 available and we have about 13 already filled. So make sure you go there, you apply, show your interest, and we'll get you all situated for our first ever Good Morning Retreat. Thanks so much for tuning into the podcast. And now back to the episode.
Welcome to Good Morning Hospitality, your one-stop shop for the latest news, noteworthy trends, and thought-provoking discussions across the industry. From hotels and short-term rentals to all things travel and hospitality, you'll find each episode equips you with the information that you need to start your week. Join us on Good Morning Hospitality every Monday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Good Morning Hospitality listeners. We are back with incredible offers from Sojo and TravelNet Solutions just for you.
Sojo is making amenity management a breeze. Connect your reservation calendar, choose from their eco-friendly amenity catalog, and leave the rest to them.
Assembly, organization, delivery, all on autopilot. And exclusively for you, our listeners, enjoy a 30-day free trial of Sojo's game-changing service.
As for TravelNet Solutions, they are revolutionizing property management with their Hospitality Hub. It's a complete integrated solution for modern hospitality needs.
Dive into this powerful platform and see how it can transform your operations.
Exclusive access for our listeners at goodmorninghospitality.com/partners, or you can just grab the link in our show notes.
Stay on top of your hospitality game with these unbeatable offers from our partners.
And now, back to the episode.
Happy New Year.
Happy Monday. Wait, yeah, yours is bigger. Happy New Year, everybody. To anyone that usually listens on the West Coast, I can almost guarantee you're not with us today, but maybe you're listening to us later this week.
And to our European friends.
Hello.
Hello. They should be up by now, right?
Definitely. And working, too, on New Year's Day. And we're down the young single people. So Brandy and Will are off today. Just the old guys with kids.
I would assume they're still asleep too, with Brandy being East Coast 10 a.m., Will being Denver time 8 a.m.
Gotta
imagine he's still asleep.
I would hope so. What time did you call it a night last night?
I was in bed by 10:30.
Okay. Yeah, I made it till about 10 last night, which is kind of late for me. But I woke up at midnight because all the fireworks in my neighborhood. Uh-huh. So probably short-term rentals just going crazy, acting a fool.
It's one of the biggest nights of the year.
Yep. I mean, it was loud.
Yeah.
One of my neighbors bought a bunch of fireworks.
Neighbors being short-term rental neighbors or long-term rental or just...
I don't know who was shooting them off. No, I didn't go out and inspect or investigate. But how was yours?
Quick question. What did you get for any good presents for Christmas?
Well, it was probably the most fun Christmas I've had because my four-year-old is now cognizant of like what's going on. So we had a really good time. And he let us off pretty easy this year. All he asked for was goldfish. So we got the boy three goldfish because we didn't know how many were going to die before Christmas.
How many are still alive?
All three, miraculously.
Nice.
Yep. What about you?
I had a funny story where we really needed a toaster. So I bought my wife a toaster and she bought me the exact same toaster, exact same model, everything. So we gifted each other the exact same toaster. So,
well, two peas in a pod.
Yeah.
You know each other's tastes.
Right.
Or you're fed the same ads on Amazon, one or the other.
Probably. Yeah. But like you, we've got a 2.5 and 6 year old. So they just love Christmas. It was great. We did it first time, just like our nuclear family, just the four of us. And it was fun. and then spent a week down in Cape San Blas at a vacation rental. Lots of private comments on this one. There's there's some things they could do better.
Was it a manager or an individual?
It was a professional manager. PSA out there, 2 pillows per person per bed should be a rule, I think.
That's kind of standard.
Yeah.
Kind of like more than one towel per person.
Right. Yeah.
Typically. You didn't bring your own pillows?
No, we should have though. It was rough.
It's all right. You win some, you lose some. Yeah. You learn.
You learn. That's what growing up is all about, right?
Yeah. You know what you need when you travel and what you don't.
Yeah.
So you can trim it up to a carry-on every time. That's my goal. Cool. Well, this week we are talking about none other than Airbnb and their multifamily project that they've been working on. Man, I think they acquired the multifamily company in 2018. So it's probably been 6 years and it just went live last year. So James got some data there. And then Jamie and I disagree on who to root for college football, but there was an interesting Wall Street Journal article on college football towns and short-term rentals and the impact thereof. So we've got some data. We've got some anecdotes. Happy Monday, everybody. Happy New Year. Jamie, you want to kick us off with the multifamily stuff?
Yeah. So, and as you said, on the multifamily side, Airbnb, can we say relaunched since it seems like they've launched it multiple times?
Well, they made some bad investments in like Nido, for example, where the guy Harvey swindled a lot of money and probably in jail right now. I'm not exactly sure. That was failed.
Did you know Harvey? I hosted him on a couple panels over the years.
Harvey?
Wow. He's an interesting guy. You know what, like when a Miami developer walks in, you're like, you're about to steal a lot of money from me. That's how it felt like when he walked into the room, but was an amazing speaker, like could hold a room in the palm of his hand.
Okay.
Yeah.
Look, I've been for a long time, I really was hopeful that this multifamily trend would take off.
Mm-hmm.
I would have bet my house on it, but I would have lost it. So
multiple times.
Yeah. I know. Don't take me to Vegas. but in, let's call it 6 years.
Yeah.
Airbnb officially launched multifamily last year. And do you want to hit us with some of the quick numbers? And they had some huge partners. Greystar is one of the largest out there, probably the largest multifamily provider in the country.
Yeah. So one, and it's a pretty significant piece of their overall supply. So 210,000 active listings, available listings as of November. So not a small piece by any means. It's
just
growing.
From this program.
No, just apartment units overall. They're seeing pretty significant growth. So where we are in the cycle, like a lot of the growth is coming from multifamily. So urban recovery, a lot of multifamily buildings actually allow it now, either part or not part of the Airbnb friendly program. So they're seeing 30% growth in total listings. Overall, US is only growing like 12%. So a significant portion of that growth is coming from multifamily listings coming in. So when they sort of announced their 1 year sort of anniversary, they called out that they had 175 buildings at the beginning, now up to 400 buildings and 125,000 units across 40 markets. But, and this is a big but, they only have 900 renters that have created a listing through the Airbnb friendly apartment program, earning approximately $7 million in the process. So 900 renters, does that surprise you given the 125,000 listings?
Well, even the it's 400 buildings, right?
Yeah.
And the average gray star building, finger to the wind, 150 keys.
Yeah.
So that's 60,000. Is that right?
So yeah, but they said it was 125. So let's say an average of 300. So it's some of their larger properties that are coming in.
But so that data is just the multifamily building is 125, just that program. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, that's remarkably low. That's to make $7 million off of that. I mean, you have luxury vacation rental companies that have 10 properties doing $7 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
So I love the mission and I love the amenity for Gray Star of you're a traveling nurse, you're a pilot, you're a wanderlust and you're gone on the weekends or you're a digital nomad, like rent out your place.
Yeah.
It's a heck of a perk. It is quite shocking that so few are actually opening their doors to it. So I'm very curious why. But to only make $7 million in a company that's making how many billions in top line?
A lot.
Yeah, it's literally billions. A blip, yeah. Right? Yeah. And 7 million, Airbnb's take of that, 15%. What's that? $1 million?
Yeah.
Of profit or of margin?
Yep.
Yeah, that's I'm still hopeful on the program. I think it is a good thing all in all, particularly in city centers where rent is really expensive and you want to be able to live in the cool part of town, the fun part of town, but you just quite frankly can't afford it. So one weekend a month, you just go to your friend's house and get a good chunk of that rent back. But it doesn't look like other people have that same idea.
Yeah, and I've been doing a little bit of thinking about in the lead up to the episode, but like how much of it is you think of people that want to do it that maybe have single family homes or and they're already doing it. And if they have that flexibility, let's say, and they said Atlanta was their number one market. Atlanta's the hub for Delta, hub for Home Depot, Cox, all these major companies.
The largest employers, a hospital system,
like. So let's just say the Delta employees that are on the road a lot, maybe not using their units as often as you and a normal person, it's going to take some time to sort of figure out that adoption of getting people into the units that want to do it. So maybe a year is too early to start measuring.
Jamie, they've been working on this for 6 years. I worked on this a little bit when I was at Noiseware, and I haven't been at Noiseware in 2 years. So yeah. Like this has been in progress. I remember taking a call from Porto in 2020 and it was with the multifamily team and they were kind of gearing up to launch at that time. So I hope it turns out to be a success. I mean, we've seen how many urban short-term rental operators go out of business in the past 24 months.
Mm-hmm.
And my gut says we're not done on that front yet. It's as dry as VC cash is. So it's a supply and demand thing. The demand is going to be there, especially the more these urban multifamily companies go out of business. And if supply drops, then demand increases and rate increases, right, Jamie? So it might become more appealing to those folks in those houses or in those multifamily buildings to let strangers sleep in their bed.
And playing devil's advocate again, how much is it that just having an Airbnb friendly building isn't enough? You've got to sort of have full service management of, I don't want to deal with the unit. I don't want to deal with the guests. And we do have an unbelievable amount of multifamily deliveries happening, new multifamily buildings coming online. Vacancies are now above pre-COVID levels after reaching record lows during the pandemic, and you could not find an open apartment. And now, and more multifamily buildings are looking to sort of solve for find more occupancy. So you'd think that short-term rentals would be a piece. And talking with some of the large multifamily operators, they're excited again about how to layer in short-term rentals as a portion of their units. So company like Placemaker used to be Y Hotels, like of like, opening up new buildings, doing the pop-up hotel thing. Like
sometimes timing is everything. And you know, we were in this hot moment of so much VC funding, so many urban operators. I mean, I couldn't even count on one hand how many have gone out of business after raising $10, $50, $100 million. Domeo and Lyric each raised over $100 million each and didn't even survive COVID. So yeah, I think there's definitely an opportunity for a newer age or one of the existing incumbents to really gobble up inventory if they can make unit economics work and if they're in the right markets. And we've seen a lot of urban markets be the wrong markets, quite frankly. And if you added a bunch of units in some of those markets during COVID, you killed it and now you're not killing it.
Yep.
So yeah, I think there's definitely an opportunity for the old business model of Y Hotel, it sounds like. And I think based on the available inventory, it should just be full-time short-term rentals. It should be a wing of the building or a floor of the building. Try and keep it separate from the long-term tenants. But, you know, as a guest traveling, I prefer to stay in full-time rentals versus someone else's actual house. It's just a bit awkward to me. Like, I can't get over that sometimes.
Yeah, and you're now what, 40? You're in the you're in the next phase of your life. Like, if we had Will on here, I'm sure he'd be willing to stay in someone's apartment if it was $100 less than a full time rental. Like price is a big lever here of and what someone's willing to stay in to save money.
Sure. But it's just, I don't know. It's weird when you see all these personal items scattered around the house. So yeah. On that, I used to short-term rent or Airbnb in this case, because I did only list with Airbnb, my house in Auburn, Alabama, a big college game day town where we become like the third largest city in the state during football games. Aside from our capital in Birmingham, but it is something that when I moved to Auburn, one of my friends said how much money they're making renting their house out for game days. And so I looked into it. I ran it by my wife. I got the okay. My parents actually had a game day house down here. So we had somewhere to go pack up and get out. And this was before kids. And my mortgage at that house was like, I don't know, $1,200-$1,300 bucks a month. So pretty affordable college town. And I was pulling in for SEC games, for graduation, things like that, pulling in $1,500 to $1,800 bucks a weekend. So to get out of the house for two nights, to like force us to clean our own house. Oh, and then I'd charge a cleaning fee, like $150 bucks, and I would just do it myself. So the pure profit on top of that, that Airbnb didn't take a margin of. And so I have experience renting out my personal primary house, but the price has to be right. We weren't going to do it for $500 bucks. It's too big of a lift, but we did it probably two or three times a year for 3 years, and it was fantastic. It furnished the house, essentially. We just put that money towards furnishings and got adult furniture.
So when the New York Times article came out and it quoted quite a bit of AirDNA data in it, sort of total number of available listings in these markets, and with the narrative around how it was killing housing markets in these college towns, of essentially making housing unaffordable and sort of changing the neighborhoods. In a market like Auburn, in a market like Athens, in a market like South Bend, like a lot of these sort of college towns that we're calling, can you describe sort of how that city changes on game day?
Lies, false. Okay, changes on game day is enormous. I mean, we're a town of, this is an old number, there's a new number out there, I'm sure, 60 or 70,000 permanent residents, layered on top with 25,000 students. And then on game days, we have another like 125,000 people come to town for an 87,000 person stadium. So it does get really crowded. And for us in Auburn, you know, the home prices are quite affordable. The attraction of living here is small town, really good public schools, those types of things. I can't say that housing prices are in any way, shape, or form affected by Airbnb. Like there's no direct correlation. When I was doing it, there were 150 listings in the entire, you know, greater Auburn area out into the suburbs. And now I think you said there's about 400. And it's actually illegal in Auburn. They banned it in certain family zones. So there's like student housing zones, and then there's family zones, and then there's commercial zones. So you can do it in the commercial and in the student areas, but not in the family zones. And but yet the average home price in this town has gone up 50% because COVID happened and people wanted to get out of big cities and into small towns, because we have the best public school system in the state. And it's a great kind of family oriented town. So I think there's a lot of these hit pieces. If you're going to attack anything, it's the really rich people that buy a second home for game days and don't ever use it besides 6, 7, 8 weekends a year. That's a real thing. And that definitely exists in this town. There's a lot of game day houses. And there's not really a way to regulate that, right? They're not renting it out to other people. It's their second home. This is their beach house.
Yeah. They
come and use it, you know, a few times a year, and the rest of the year it sits empty.
And that inventory is not showing up on Airbnb or Vrbo. It's the property that they're using.
Yep.
So yeah. When we look at the inventory in a market like Auburn or Athens or some of these cities, like we see, let's say a baseline and pulled data for Athens, as that's where I went to college. That's where I sort of cut
where
my
teeth.
You go from sort of off season, maybe 200 units in a market, up on game day, I know, well over 1,000. And it's 99% occupancy. Essentially, everything that's available to be booked in that city on game day is being booked. So there's a significant number of people that list their homes only on game day. You've got a market that is pretty hotel constrained, which most college towns are. There's just no way for the available hotels to sort of accommodate the number of people that want to come in for that night.
Yep.
The unit economics of building new hotels doesn't make sense. Right. And for 7, 8 weekends a year that you're going to see sort of strong demand.
Yep.
So short-term rentals really solves a problem here of how do you expand supply during peak demand? The vast majority of the supply, like in Athens, it's only 25% is available full time. So that sort of 200 listing unit is like the full time short-term rental supply, which is, and in a market of 56,000 housing units, is minuscule.
Yep.
And you're able to and get more people in for the games that want to stay, and it's
spending
pretty
money
much
in
locals,
your restaurants and
locals earning money. Like it's you that was able to essentially cover your rent on renting out your place 6-7 nights a year, or at least the rent for that month, right?
Yeah, I was getting my mortgage and a half for a weekend, for leaving my house for a weekend. And I mean, I definitely vetted and screened the guests when there was a sorority that said, can we pack 10 people in there? And, you know, the answer is no. That might be illegal now, you know, based on age or whatever. But at the time, it wasn't. And so we only had multi-generational families stay at our house. And like, they legitimately left it better than they found it. And we always had such a great experience with it. You know, it was only once we had a kid that it just became too much work to actually leave the house. What I think is another, I mean, it might be a stretch to say life-saving, but quite frankly, a life-saving thing of having short-term rentals in a college town is people aren't drinking all day at the football game and then driving back to Atlanta from Athens or from Auburn.
Yeah.
And if they could just walk or take a bus or take an Uber back to their short-term rental for a night, and then it's the roads are a lot safer. And I mean, that's a big problem in after games is people just being blasted, hopping in their car, driving an hour, hour and a half. So it does span a little bit more than that. But of course, you've got the NIMBYs saying, I don't want parties in my backyard and whatnot. And yeah, the counter to that is on game day, everyone's throwing a party anyway. So yeah. Like, what are you actually solving for? They could own the house and yeah. They're throwing a party. That's just what happens in college towns on game days.
And maybe taking a second back of the opportunity for short-term rental investment in college towns. Like, it's always been, I think, a pretty interesting one given and the high percent of renters, high percent of student housing already, which is essentially just long-term furnished rentals.
Yep.
You have so many people sort of centered around a university that could be transient. So you've got professors coming for maybe a stint lecturing. You've got students maybe doing a semester on, semester off. They're studying abroad one semester, so they don't want to take a long-term lease.
Coaches.
Doctors, yep. Nurses, coaches. You've got students coming in like, and there's football players all the time that sort of transfer and want to sort of get going. And we're just the traditional lease structure that a lot of these markets have just doesn't work for how people want to come in and out of a market given their need. So it would seem that short-term rentals would be a welcome opportunity to add sort of short and midterm rentals into that market.
Yeah. If you have a long-term rental, which in a college town like Auburn or Athens is as safe of an investment as you can make, because it's going to be rented. There's turnover every 4 years, you know, worst case, best case, worst case turnover every year. And it is a very aggressive or overcrowded real estate market. I mean, you're getting nominal returns because it's so safe. It's like a 4 or 5 cap. If you miss a renter for the fall or for the spring, you're in trouble, right? You lost 6 months because you're not going to get somebody halfway through a semester.
Yeah.
And that being able to turn it into a short-term rental during the fall, you probably would make more money.
Yeah.
In the spring, you probably wouldn't. So it does matter. And some of these multifamily, there's 6 or 7 huge, massive new builds in Auburn starting to look a little bit like Athens. And it inevitably they've got vacancy, like they have to.
Yeah.
But they're just sitting on that vacancy. And guys like Mickey from Vector can come in and actually help them, you know, make something off of it. So yeah, I think there is a business model there. I don't think it's like massive big business because it is so seasonal and so cyclical. But it is a great real estate investment if you want to have a solid 4 or 5 cap.
Yeah. And I even loved the business model, the company called ReRent that was in the Techstars here in Atlanta, that they were going into college markets where essentially people were taking long-term leases, one-year leases, and then they leave. And the summer months are the sort of top months. You go into a market like Boston where, and when students are there, there's no tourists. And when students
That's how Flatbook leave, started.
Yeah.
you know who Flatbook is?
No.
Flatbook is Sonder.
Okay. So that was Francis's model as well.
Yeah.
And potentially a lot of opportunity there of just and underutilized real estate. And that's what I think we go back to so much within the short-term rental space is it's people looking to investors looking to monetize underutilized real estate when it could otherwise be earning returns and how to sort of maximize overall returns on those properties.
Yeah. I mean, if it's sitting empty and vacant and you've got furniture already in there, you may as well, unless you're wealthy enough and in a position that you don't have to. But for most of us, that's not the case. So TLDR, I'm a big fan of short-term rentals in college towns. It's not a It's a winning recipe for the locals. It's not a winning recipe for investors. And Airbnb multifamily, I hope they can figure it out and crack that nut because I think it is a big opportunity. I'm still a believer in that segment, but I am a little disappointed at how poor the adoption has been and to only like top line $7 million. That's not good.
Well, fun topics today. Best day of the week.
Best day of the week. Happy New Year, everybody. Shout out to our sponsors, Track and Sojo. Thanks for helping Jamie and I get out of bed this morning and in front of the microphone. So happy New Year, everybody. This is the first of at least 52 episodes we'll do this year. So excited to see where we take it this year. We hit 1.89 million downloads in 2023, which is absolutely wild. But thank you to all of the listeners who've tuned in over the time and tune in more this year.